Joan Rivers launches the Fox Network, X-Files airs its most controversial episode, and Alec Baldwin manages a lemon party this week on 30-2010.
30-2010, here we go again. Analyzing decades, sitting with our friends, those were different days. And there's so much to say.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of 30-2010,
Woo!
Your weekly look back in pop culture history and what happened 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago. That's 1986, 1996, and 2006, which is getting less crappy all the time.
Ah, yeah. It's really growing, coming into itself
yes,
in October.
In October. But I'm one of your hosts, Brett Elston.
I'm the best host, Chris Antista, the one who gets the most complaints.
I'm Dave Rudden. Can we talk?
I'm the ghost in the Diana.
That's a different person, dude.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Just did Linda Richman.
Oh, whoops. I thought, didn't Joan Rivers say it too?
Yeah.
She says that all
yeah,
the
can
time.
We talk? Yeah. That was her catch.
All right, all right.
Can we talk?
Yeah, Linda Richman is talk amongst yourself.
Talk amongst yourself.
But this is the week, October 7th through the 13th. We go week by week and look at what happened in music, movies, TV, and video games every week. You can listen to us on 302010.net. Mm-hmm. You can look at our Patreon at patreon.com/lasertime.
Mm-hmm.
You can look at our network, wondery.com, where you find other episodes of other podcasts like radio dramas.
Sex crimes in audio tape.
Shows about movies, shows about reality shows, or whatever have you. But as always, we begin in 1986 with a little bit of news. Phantom of the Opera debuts in London.
Okay, so not in general. That's an old player.
No,
right?
That's the first time.
Really?
No, that's the musical debuts. The Andrew Lloyd Webber debuts in London. It moves to Broadway in, I think, 2 years. It's still playing in London.
Wow.
And it's not the oldest show there.
Wow.
It's the third oldest
what do they
show
got? Fantastics?
There.
Cats?
A little bit of who's on first?
I think Les Mis has run longer there.
Les Miserables.
Right. And the Mousetrap, which is a Angela...
Nathan Lane? That's Mouse Hunt. I apologize.
No, it's an Agatha Christie play. It's been there 50-something years. It's just an institution now. People just go to be like, yeah, I went to Mousetrap.
I've seen Phantom of the Opera.
Literally hundreds of thousands of people. Millions of people have seen Mousetrap.
I assume Spider-Man will run longer than that, right?
It's already over.
In my heart.
Turn off the dark.
Yeah, I literally have only seen the terrible Phantom of the Opera musical movie with
Gerard
Butler.
I forgot about
that.
Which one's the Robert Englund one? That's the creepy Phantom of the Opera, right?
What?
There's a Robert Englund one.
No.
Is there?
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
I mean, it's the Lon Chaney one, like the classic one. But...
Oh, I can't wait to pull that off the shelf. There's my classic Monsters box set right there.
That's a good one. Mm-hmm.
But movies this week, October 7th to 13th again. Again, this is one of those, I have seen this. But it's the name that sticks with me more than anything else.
Dude.
The balance of power, the safety of America, and the fate of the free world are all in the hands of a woman named Whoopi.
That's so weird.
Jumping Jack Flash.
She doesn't play a character named Whoopi in the movie.
Yeah.
That's how, the ascent Whoopi Goldberg was on.
Yeah, that's true.
Don LaFontaine doesn't say a lot of people's names.
Yeah, but I saw this
dude,
as a
this
kid.
Dude, this is on TV all the time. I have no memories of it. Other than them calling out the lyrics to the Rolling Stones song.
Right.
You were born in a crossfire hurricane? What the hell is that? That's the only thing I remember. And not a single other thing. But I know she gets these unwitting participant in espionage. Run, run, chase, chase. Solve, solve.
It's got a ton of good character actors. I think it's most important is Penny Marshall's.
Belushi?
No, Penny Marshall's first directorial film.
It is. It is.
Good old Laverne
is
making movies, and you're like, no big deal. Yeah, she's made two amazing League of Their Own and Big, baby.
Yeah. And I like Awakenings.
And Awakenings is pretty good.
And this is part of the ascent of Whoopi Goldberg. Mm-hmm. She'll be on Star Trek Next Generation and in season two as Guinan in 88 to 89, but she loved Star Trek so much that she wanted to be in it, but it was her movie commitments and other commitments that she couldn't be a regular on the show every week, otherwise she probably would have been, but...
Yeah.
between this and, I mean, Sister Act is still many years away, but, like, that's the next like, huge thing.
Ghost is 3-4 years away.
Ghost.
Homer and Eddie's probably, like, 1 year away. With the Belushi again, who's in this movie.
The Belushi.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. How long until she does that movie with the dinosaur?
Theodore Rex. Rex. Yeah. That movie was so much fun to watch.
No, it wasn't. But that's the thing, it wasn't.
I was hammered, no, I should say that. Like, it's one of the drunkest shitlord movie nights we've ever had.
Theodore Rex.
More movies should have the same titles as Rolling Stones songs.
Indeed.
Painted Black or...
Theodore Rex.
Yeah.
Brown Sugar. I think there is a Brown Sugar.
I'm sure there's
Voodoo Lounge. I'm out of Stone songs.
Gimme Shelter. Come on.
There is a Gimme Shelter. It's a documentary about Altamont, so and it's amazing.
For what it's worth, that aforementioned Phantom of the Opera is 1989 with Robert Englund. He plays like Jill Sholin, a sandbag New York soprano, dreams she's being chased by a slasher in Victorian London. It's Robert Englund. But the cover
was this before Freddy? No, it was after Freddy.
This is 89, but I just remember the cover is Robert Englund with a very Freddy-ish burned face, but he's holding the opera mask and it's a skull.
So, welcome to the opera, bitch.
Also at the same week, 1986.
Mm-hmm. At her 25-year high school reunion.
Well, Charlie won't be here tonight. We're getting divorced, actually.
She'll disappear in time. And arrive in her senior year of high school.
What am I doing here? You passed out for a minute, that's all.
Peggy Sue got murdered.
I feel like you can make this movie every 10 years for some older audience going back to your senior year.
This is a great movie, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Francis Ford Coppola, for some reason, not really sure why, it kind of sticks out on his resume, but...
It was his biggest success since Apocalypse Now.
Yeah, Kathleen Turner is great in this.
Yeah, I love Kathleen Turner.
And Nicolas Cage.
Yep, Nicolas Cage.
I think his first movie with his uncle.
Yeah.
Yes, a little nepotism there. I think there was rumors that he wanted to fire him because he didn't like the sound of his voice. Well, this is Cage. He's been in other movies at this point, but like Valley Girl, where he's kind of doing a straightforward role. This is his first step in like full cagey nonsense.
Wow. There's actually a clip here called Cage Flipping Out.
Yeah.
Let's hear this, Biz.
You're going to blow it, Peggy Sue. No one treats Charlie Bodell like this.
Why do you have to talk about yourself in the third person like you were Napoleon? Why does everything have to be an argument with you?
Look, I've got the hair. I've got the teeth. I've got the eyes. Oh, Peggy, look outside that window. I've got the car. I'm the lead singer. I'm the man. Why are you arguing with me?
It's over, Charlie. I don't want to hurt you. I want you to be happy.
But no, I will be happy if I have you. I love you.
No, that doesn't make any difference. We just can't live together. And you went off with that bimbo, Janet.
What are you talking about?
The music is getting louder.
His face is all over the place in the clip. But like the premise of it is sort of interesting. You heard in the beginning of the trailer clip that Kathleen Turner is sort of like getting divorced from Nicolas Cage. She goes back to her senior year and kind of like, everything I found impressive about my boyfriend, the guy of my dreams, is it a fucking illusion. And I can have a do-over and maybe never end up with my husband. And they have a daughter played by Helen Hunt, who is 9 years younger than Turner and a year older than Nick Cage. But yes, that's only in the present, the flashback. Because they're the same age in their flashbacks. They're aged up.
This
whatever.
Is before Raising Arizona, right?
Right before Raising Arizona.
God damn it, I love that movie so much.
The movie's really good.
But this is also, and I don't know why this tidbit, because it's not his first, but like Jim Carrey is in a first
notable
role. Yeah,
but he has a lot of lines, though.
Okay.
I can't remember if the Deadpool came out before this. Not that Deadpool. Dirty Harry one.
The Deadpool. Yes. It's on Twitter. It's at the Deadpool.
Yes.
The real Deadpool. And then same week again.
Also notable. This was supposed to be Penny Marshall's debut. They fired her because they thought the movie was going to be too huge for a first-time director.
Wow.
And I just find it so odd. Her movie releases the same day and beats the movie she was fired from. That has to be vindication, the likes of which none of us will ever see.
And it's not what I would consider a big movie. It kind of feels like a very small movie. Mm-hmm. I mean... But there's some classic cars in it, but I don't know. It's not like it's effects heavy. There aren't action scenes.
Everything looks the exact same as the Back to the Future sets for the most part.
Yep. And I love that. I think one of her friends is Joan Allen, mm-hmm. and she totally looks like one of the Teen Girl Squad. She looks like the ugly one.
I also like that we're all kind of like, well, pop culture is kind of 80s obsessed and loves reflecting on that. Like, this is just the exact same thing in the 80s of the 50s. It's just crazy.
Yeah, but it's not just like, haha, look, everything was stupid back then.
No, there's some jokes about that,
but it's about being middle-aged and having regrets.
It's about writers, directors trying to reflect on a time when they were young to make things for young people.
We just watched Stand By Me, which is so similar. Good. Like, it's the 80s looking back at the 50s. Mm-hmm. But yeah, also about this week, True Stories.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
David Byrne of Talking Heads.
Just a great little intro to the trailer.
Hi, my name's David Byrne, and I made a movie about a bunch of people in Virgil, Texas.
David, relax. Relax. When you're going to look up into the camera.
They're getting ready for the 150th anniversary of their state. They're calling it a celebration of specialness.
Something's happening here, all right.
I love all these 80s trailers that just try and buck the formula of a normal trailer. Like, the director's coming out to introduce their own thing. And
I'm Stephen King.
David Byrne's super awkward. I did not know this is technically written by Stephen Tobolowsky.
Really?
Needle Nose Ned never had... right. Yeah,
I sure as heck remember him.
Tobol number one for PS1?
No. Wow, that's a really good one. Man, hold on, that threw me for a spin. I just started envisioning my personal, my ideal game right now. But David Byrne changed around a bunch of the script, but he is the top credited writer. I don't know if that he has another screenwriting credit.
Yeah. So when you ring out, you fall into a puddle. Is that it?
Oh, it's a doozy.
So
this is a joke for no one.
Doozy.
So we're a couple years after Stop Making Sense, which is great.
But just a straightforward concert film.
Yeah, it's just a concert film, but a really, really good one.
Yeah.
And it seems that film producers are just sort of like, well, people like seeing David Byrne.
Yeah.
David Byrne, you want some money and just go do whatever?
Yeah.
And he kind of just sort of does.
Yeah, and he basically writes a bunch of Talking Heads. The Talking Heads are in the film. They do. Yeah. I think they have... It's the 150th anniversary of this town in Texas. They're all throwing like a talent show. It's just a bunch of vignettes of a bunch of people in the town, but they do a lot of songs. And in the movie, it's those songs are performed by the actors. There is an adjacent album where the Talking Heads perform those songs.
Right.
And I don't know. I remember like I was watching Beavis and Butthead and like, why is John Goodman singing a Talking Head song right now? What the hell is this? And it's from True Stories. Hmm. That's where Wild Wild Life came from. If you want an awesome... I didn't want to tell you who the actor was, but I love John Goodman, speaking of Raising Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
But this is great.
Millions of people are waiting on love. And this is a song about people like us.
If you can't see that, that sounds like David Byrne, and it's John Goodman!
And he has the most Boss Hog outfit on.
John Goodman is the best.
Yeah.
I love that he's still alive.
Fucking King Ralph. I'll never forget him.
Glad he lost all that Cloverfield weight, because I'm starting to get worried.
Yeah.
He was all jowls in that film. Yeah. It made him scary.
It was a great movie.
True Stories are really interesting. There's a song in the film, and that's where Radiohead takes its name. The song Radiohead from True Stories.
Mm-hmm. Finally, at this week for movies, I had never heard of this.
But you've probably seen the basketball clip.
Possibly.
Yes.
Listen to the trailer.
From Wes Craven, the director of Nightmare on Elm Street, comes Deadly Friend.
Starts Friday at a theater near you.
Deadly Friend is follow-up to Nightmare on Elm Street, which I guess that it's hard to put that in perspective how huge that was, because we're so used to horror villains like that, but Nightmare on Elm Street was crazy big.
Yeah. So I have the notes here of one of the more prominent examples of studio meddling.
Mm-hmm.
Wes Craven would later say the movie had, quote, 20 producers, end quote, and it went from a more personal horror movie, which was supposed to be, into a gory splatfest after Warner Brothers execs imposed reshoots and rewrites.
But it shows you how fucking inept they are. They hire him to make this film, this personal film, and they don't really know who he is.
Mm.
So I think the story was, when they're showing it to test audience, like, oh shit, Wes Craven movie.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, wait, Wes Craven's known for something? We had no idea. We just hired whatever. And they made mandatory reshoots of extreme gore in a movie that had none. And it is... It's not just that it's extreme. Just look up Deadly Friend Basketball. You want to see the mom from the Goonies head explode?
Yeah, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Yes, throwing a basketball Buffy. At Mama Fratelli's head.
Yes.
But it's supposed to be a sci-fi movie, right? Or not, yeah. Not a total like ghost monster movie. More like
I think
a,
so, yeah. Like a little more straightforward of a thriller. Here's another little clip I wanted to grab. There's a robot. Because basically what happens, a young man...
Of course, this movie has a robot in it.
Well, a genius young man befriends a girl who is then killed by her father, essentially. Unjustly, so he wants to put her body and or an AI in her body to somehow bring her back to life. That's how she becomes a deadly friend. But here's the robot. His name is BB, and he's voiced by someone who is one of my favorite people ever. And I want to see if you can get it. He voices another famous character.
Hey, careful, it'll hurt you. Who, this garbage can?
All right, pause it. Can you tell who?
It's Fleischer.
Yeah, it is Charles Roger Fleischer, Rabbit, the voice of Roger Rabbit, yeah. Mostly doing like unintelligible, blah, 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 but then just that one line.
Yep. Grabs the guy's balls in his metal hand and hoists him off the ground.
The robot is the shit. This is totally ungnarly.
Put some money on the cubbies.
But I don't know. I've never seen this, but it's like...
I think I've read or heard bad movie podcasts or websites talking about it, that it's so disjointed that it's one of those you can tell something got reshoot, something got recut or meddled with, where it's like the tone just wildly shifts, and it's just very disjointed but very. Very watchable.
I've seen many Wes Craven movies. Go watch the clip of the basketball scene. It is trauma-esque. Yeah. It goes on forever. It's played for laughs and gore, whereas the rest of the movie isn't. It's very strange.
TV this week. Big note.
Yes.
At a time when television, everybody, for broadcast TV, at a time when cable's penetration was still not nationwide. I didn't have cable at this point. No one on my street did.
Double Dare just happened. Yeah. It's the biggest thing cable ever had. That and Fraggle Rock.
But there were only three
ABC,
networks.
NBC, CBS were broadcasting, and you could get PBS various places over the air as well. But today, October 9th...
was the launch of the Fox Network. Kind of a subdued launch. With one new show, The Late Show with Joan Rivers.
Yeah. Mm. And there's this is a weird clip because I love people's first talk show performances.
Sure.
But she is so taken aback and like, if I wasn't really around then, I've only heard rumors, but this was in the tabloids everywhere because she used to guest host the Tonight Show.
Yes, she had a lot of experience.
She asked for Johnny Carson's permission. He famously said no. And like, kind of like, not only. Not bashed her in the press, but like she was never allowed back on the show ever again. They were like good friends who never made up, and like this was talked about everywhere. So she can't even really do a monologue because her hosting the show has been the subject of tabloid ridicule for months. So like, unlike Chevy Chase being awkward, this is her monologue.
I have a whole monologue which you won't do tonight. I am just. It's been 5 months, and so much has been said, and so much has been written, and I am just so. So happy to be here, and I thank you all so much.
And that's it. She's practically in tears, can't do her monologue, and I don't know. Just thought that was very strange. What's what happens when you let a woman host a talk show? Emotions get to her.
Miss Joan.
Yeah, Joan. Joan Rivers is so fucking funny. I was really pissed. I never had an album of hers. I was really bummed out about that because someone's like, "Right, you brought up Robin Williams, why not Joan Rivers?" And like. I only know her from. I love The Swimmer. She's great in The Swimmer. Like what?
Great in Spaceballs.
Muppets Take Manhattan.
Muppets Take Manhattan She's for sure. Funny.
She had another talk show in the 90s or something, right? Didn't she?
She did have a Can We Talk somewhere.
And like E shows out the butt.
Yeah.
And that awful red carpet horseshit.
And then online she had In Bed with Joan.
Yes, In Bed with Joan.
Which was usually very funny.
She has a fantastic documentary about her.
Piece of work.
It's so funny. She is so funny. Holy shit.
Good episode of Louie as well.
Yes. A fantastic episode of Louie.
Yeah.
What, she like offered to blow him, I think, or something?
No, they fuck.
Oh, they fuck. Okay.
Spoiler. Yeah.
But
it's so weird that Fox never went back to having a nighttime talk show.
I don't think it other than Chevy
until
Chase.
The Magic Hour.
Oh yeah.
No, the Magic Hour syndicated.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Chevy Chase was Fox's own sitcom. or sorry, own talk show and lasted all of 6 weeks.
But Fox, like you said, it's a soft launch, and come April or the spring is where you'll
come
start.
Come April, this show's no longer airing, but that's when they start to have their first original primetime shows.
Yeah, so Married to Children, Tracy Ullman Show,
a real soft
which is
launch.
The birth, which
for a
is
channel
the
that's on 24/7
as well around that period.
Well, this is also in a time when TV wasn't on 24/7.
Yeah, that's
true. They would go off the air at 1 or 2 in the morning, and it was a test pattern.
I remember waiting for TV
American
to come
flag.
Back on for Saturday morning cartoons.
Weeks,
oh shit, they're raising the flag at Iwo Jima. That means NBC's about to start.
Yep. And man, we talked a few weeks ago in the 2006 segment about the 40th anniversary of Ultraman, the Japanese kaiju show, and came on, and then we got in America, the 90s one, Towards the Future, but it only aired at 6 a.m., and I'd have to get up at 6 a.m. to watch it, and prior to that is just a test pattern where the national anthem plays, everybody salutes the flag, and
I thought I read it's either this month or next, this segment of 30-20-10 or the next one where Disney Channel goes 24/7 because channels just didn't really feel the need to do that.
Yeah, and this is kind of the start.
As an alcoholic insomniac, I find unacceptable just thinking about it.
I remember when the networks finally started going 24 hours, it was a big deal because it's like ABC's now just going to air stuff all the time.
Yeah, mostly Bloomberg News and Farm Reports. But
anyway, the Fox Network is not a thing that was around when we were born, and it took till 1986. So,
It took from it started in 1985. The seeds were sown by Mr. Murdoch buying up a lot of independent affiliates.
Stark contrast to what we'll announce in the next segment, which is their news network.
Yeah.
They could not be more opposed. but anyway,
And some notable season premieres with some interesting guest stars in the scope of 1986. The two-part, seven-season premiere of Magnum P.I. features Alfonso Ribeiro? Carlton from the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air as a missing boy.
Aww.
And I'm guessing they found him in West Philadelphia.
It was Beverly Hills. It's where Magnum P.I. is in Los Angeles. I've never seen this episode. I'm fairly clear. But it's a two-parter, baby.
I had a little toy car that I pretended Magnum P.I. drove around in. Tom
and,
Selleck.
Night Court had its fourth season premiere starring John Astin, who was Gomez Adams as their
He was in
the
show a lot, right?
Was he? I'm not sure.
Because when you said that, I'm like, oh, I remember that. And it couldn't have been one episode.
Mm.
Like, it might have been the first time.
This one had a bunch of ventriloquist dummies in it.
Yes.
You're remembering this?
I do. Because that was his obsession, right? Like, he was into ventriloquists or something?
He was a magician.
I mean, Harry Anderson was,
But yeah, Night Court we talked about in more depth, like the fourth or fifth episode this year, because there's a specific episode, I think.
Third.
Oh, with Mel Torme, actually.
Yeah.
If you care, please go backwards and listen to that. Not a lot in video games, because, again, it's 86, and this is... we keep going back to Japan for notable things, like Castlevania debuted in the Famicom Disk System 30 years ago, but nothing really this week. Music... Count Three and Pray, Berlin's album.
Ooh.
Berlin being the band who did Take My Breath Away from the Top Gun soundtrack.
Yeah, Terry Nunn.
Which is great. It's a great video. It's a great song. But taking us out is Rain and Blood, Slayer's third album. And I don't know much about it because I didn't listen to a lot of Slayer in 1986, as you can imagine, being five. But considered, after the fact, to be one of the most influential metal albums and... led to really the popularity, mainstream acceptance of, as accepted as it can be, death metal, thrash metal, just intense, you know, aggressive lyrics and super nutty guitar riffs and stuff. Like, this being an album people point back to of like, man, that was when this sound kind of really took off as a not just people, you know, playing in your basements or bedrooms, but like kind of being out there.
I have to imagine in 1986, suburban parents getting an album called Rain and Blood. No, thank you, Little Tim. You're not getting this.
It stars Thomas Rain. we'll go out with Slayer's Rain and Blood. When we come back, what happened this same week in 1996?
Rain and blood from a lacerated sky, bleeding in horror, draining my structure. Now I shall rain in blood.
Hi everyone, Kent Garrison here, here to tell you about another show on the Wondery Network. Mad About Movies is your go-to podcast for all things cinema. Every week we break down movie news, movie rumors and rumblings, and our chosen movie of the week. We discuss the best of the best, the worst of the worst, and everything in between. And don't forget our world-famous weekly recommend segment, where we suggest something you should check out ASAP. So check us out on iTunes, Mad About Movies, madaboutmoviespodcast.com, until then, we'll see you at the cinema.
Time to head on home.
Send that to his son.
As soon as my fruit by the foot is done.
So he started to eat it, don't you know? Hours later,
still not ready to go.
See, with fruit by the foot, the fun just lasts and lasts. So he kept eating,
and the time just passed.
Until one day when it began to snow, he looked around and said,
okay, now we can go.
Fruit by the foot, long earned fun.
You like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
Wait, we want to just talk about this briefly, because I was trying to just get proof positive on this. It wasn't just a triple feature of the Castro.
Quadruple?
It was a tetralogy of Robert Zemeckis' Bob Gale movies. What's the movie we saw, Dave?
What, Used Cars?
Yeah, I could. Yeah. I looked around for a clip of it. Did you end up liking Used Cars?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought it was so
and
fun.
And just the one time they used the dock to sell a car, everyone's like, everyone started to understand what was happening about like midway through the gag, and they're like, oh. And like, even though like the dog
they're
going
to fake running over this adorable beagle to sell a car.
And that dog's such a great
actor.
And
the dog, yes, the dog is, one of the, he's like, my dog, you ran over my dog. And he picks up the dog, and the dog like throws its tongue out of its mouth and like pretends to be dead.
I'm sure that's probably multiple dogs, but that was one of the best actors I've ever seen. Like, not only, I'm actually sad that dog is dead.
Yeah, not only is that dog dead, any of that dog's puppies are dead.
Yeah.
Are there pet Oscars?
There should be.
I say Animal Planet, what are you doing?
I say it as a joke, and then I'm actually like, I would watch...
What are you doing?
If it was an annual 60-minute special.
Yes!
Yeah.
That, like, this is the best reaction shot.
Yes.
They should call it the Good Boys. Good boy.
Well, patreon.com/lasertime if you want to... If you want to see the Good Boys.
Get Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly, full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as weekly full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, physical rewards, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again.
Beautiful
a
people.
Very metal episode.
Such noise.
Yeah. Mm. But this, when I saw this come up on the list of like, oh, what's the next music? That's 10 years old. I assume this was already older than that. 20 years old.
96.
For some reason, I didn't place this as a 96 thing, but when I think about
it's following up alternative.
I remember playing Mario 64 with this album on in the background.
My God.
That's those are two totally different.
Yeah, I mean, I was a friend brought the album over. He's like, listen to this, and I'm like, dude, I'm trying to listen to Mario 64 soundtrack.
Trying to pull Mario's face around.
But Antichrist Superstar, Marilyn Manson's second album, huge hit, 7 million albums sold of this. And as you can suspect, Marilyn Manson's a lot of anti-Christian and body mutilation lyrics at a time when that was not popular radio music. So part of the Dead to the World tour that kicked off in last year, and just the start of Marilyn Manson being that controversial, weird
his
guy.
Music was
I'm
controversial.
I'm clutching my pearls.
My pearl, like, I'm about to rip this necklace off like a Martha Wayne.
Monocle just popped right out.
I'm giving a Dover Boys Randy Orton. No.
My word.
But now, as years would persist, it's like when you actually do interviews with him, he's like pretty soft-spoken.
Dude, he is four steps away from doing like a Nickelodeon talk show. There's nothing dangerous about Marilyn
he's
Manson.
He's reverted back to his original form, Paul from Wonder Years. Wow. That's totally not a rumor. Look,
but like, yeah, just like he was super shock rock guy, and
because I remember
not so much anymore. Like
that was the at this time MTV was still a really dominant force in music because the radio sort of tried to push this and it didn't really take. But MTV visually needed a star like Marilyn Manson to take off. We were coming out of the bland grunge days, and so to me, MTV pushed Manson super hard. Like, you kids are gonna like, here's a cover of Bizarre Love Triangle, like what was
Tainted Love?
Tainted Love, and like they tried their best to. And this, but this was the album that broke. Like this took this took with the audience.
Yeah, and this combined with, again, last week we mentioned songs like Future Sound of London, Prodigy, all this stuff is starting to catch on, and it's like, it's really digging out of the grunge alternative metal thing.
That's fucking shoegazing. Like,
that's really just disappearing, and then 2 years from now it is all boy bands and Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera. So it's 90s are definitely going through, like, every sound gets like two hot years, and then it kind of makes way for something else.
Right. So this is still Marilyn Manson, the band.
Yes.
Does he break with the band?
No, I don't.
The person?
I think he has a lot of consistent band members. I thought it was the band because they all have, like, some combination of icon, serial killer for their names, but do not quote me on that.
Yeah, because there's, like, Smells Like Children from before, and then after this is...
Well, that is too far!
Mechanical Animals. In,
right.
But I don't remember, yeah, what... there was a song called Kaboom I remember listening to in, like, 2003 or something, but... Mm-hmm. That's all I can remember, but Marilyn Manson, KMFDM, and a lot of other bands that I liked, like I think even Rammstein, got lumped in with the Columbine shooting on April 20th, 99, and of course every one of those artists is like, nuh-uh. Mm. But we'll get to that if we do the show for 2 more years.
So. And as today, they're still inspiring school shootings to this day.
Oh, yeah,
that's right. It's all Marilyn Manson's fault. What scapegoat do they need now?
Yeah, video games are violent. And how many America, times though, a week do I see people fighting in football games? Anyway, also out this week, Brown, POD's second album.
Pod, baby.
This is before you're going to get Party Down or Party Up or whatever.
Feel so alive.
That's even after this. Also, Exhibit's debut album, At the Speed of Life.
Yeah.
I heard you liked Exhibit.
So
I put Exhibit in the show.
I didn't put Exhibit in the show. They might be Giant's sixth album.
Ooh, wait. Hold on. John Henry?
No.
Fuck. Apollo 18?
No.
Really?
I know.
It's not Flood.
No. It does start with an F, though. It's two words.
Factory Showroom?
Yes.
There you go.
Sixth album.
96. Wow.
Tell me anything about that.
Oh, that's great. Like, it didn't get a lot of MTV play, but like since MTV seemed to have license to any video it was given, They Might Be Giants is like the score to like MTV Sandblast
or
Act Breaks for the Real World.
Sure.
Got a lot of play off Factory Showroom. SEXXY, I think, in particular.
You saw him not that long ago in SF, right?
Kind of a long time ago, but yeah.
I guess it would be years ago now.
Yes.
Also about Tell Me Something, the songs of Mose Allison, a Van Morrison jazz collaboration album, notable in that most everything is a first or second take, so that it's not super produced. It's like, no, we're just going to play, and then whatever we record, that's what's going in the album. And very important to note, Genuine, The Bachelor, the debut album from Genuine that goes double platinum, known most for Pony.
Yeah.
And also notable from Magic Mike.
I have to take my shirt off now.
Yeah, the song was
made
for taking shirts off.
I'm going to grind stuff against a wheel.
Excuse me, I'm going to thrust my pelvis up against an ottoman real fast.
You've seen the movie.
Yes.
You could have told me this came out 10 years ago, and I'd be like, oh, that sounds right.
This song is great.
This song is only... it's been more popular in the last decade than...
This is by the Budweiser Frogs, right?
Jesus Christ. But, man... Huge, huge hits, and again, we've talked briefly, it hasn't come up in the show naturally, but Magic Mike XL, XXL, one of my favorite movies of last year.
So great.
And this song features prominently, you can guess why, but 20 years old, and this reminds me, though, of one of my favorite, Parks and Rec has so many good jokes, but many years into the show, they end up going to Donna's house, this lake house, and Tom Haverford, aka Aziz Ansari, who is always like making a lot of like pop culture references, 90s R&B. He's dating Anne, who is Rashida Jones, and they have this moment in Donna's lake house.
Is that Genuine?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you have Genuine's platinum record on your wall? Why do you have a photo of you with Genuine at some place?
Oh, have I never talked about this before? Genuine's my cousin.
Genuine? The Genuine is your cousin? How do I not know this?
Who is Genuine?
Genuine?
Just look up.
Genuine is Genuine. He's Genuine.
Saying over and over again is not going to help me.
He's an R&B singer. Pony. Differences. Do you really not know who Genuine is?
I know that he's Donna's cousin.
When I'm dating someone, I have a list called my oh-no-nos. A woman commits an oh-no-no, it can end the relationship. Not loving 90s R&B music is number 3. On the oh-no-no's list.
They did not give Rashida Jones a lot to do on that show.
No, they really
didn't. I don't know who Genuine is.
No, and she's almost a straight person to everyone else's eccentric personalities, which is that show is so great. But anyway, every time I hear Genuine, I just think of him like it comes through on his face of just like I don't know how to go on with this sentence. Like he's genuine. Anyway, news this week, 1996. Man, I need some help here. Carlos Bello, and Jose Ramos Horta win the Nobel Peace Prize for their work ending civil war in East Timor.
Let's talk more about Genuine.
Genuine? Yep.
I'm sure they were playing pony at the party afterwards with the King of Sweden.
What was going on in East Timor?
After Suharto died, they basically had a dictator, and then they didn't have a dictator, and then everyone's fighting each other because it's Indonesia, and it's millions and millions of islands, and so everyone's fighting everyone else, and they helped, and I believe East Timor is now its own country, and everything's cool.
Good.
So
I was going to say something about Homer's coworker, but that's Tibor.
Tibor. Yep. Movies this week. The Chamber.
Boring. Nobody cares.
Gene Hackman.
And Harry Potter.
Look, I think the first failure of a John Grisham adaptation. Nobody remembers this.
Because we have to...
Well, about Pelican Brief. Was that before?
That was the second one, I believe.
Yeah. Because there's, what, The Firm?
I really do remember. Right. It's The Firm, Pelican Brief, and The Client, and I believe this is fourth or fifth.
Yeah.
Possibly, give or take. Rainmaker was after this.
Yeah.
I don't even know why I know this. I never liked these films.
Gene Hackman, Chris O'Donnell, in between Batman movies.
If it stars Chris O'Donnell, it sucks. Doesn't matter what it is.
Ron Howard, there was a note in the wiki about this. Ron Howard almost directed this, but left instead to do Ransom.
Good.
Okay.
Give me back my son! Somebody remakes that.
Yes.
Not me.
And then Michael Collins?
Right.
Liam Neeson, Alan Rickman.
My mom's stroke movie. I don't...
Yeah. No, it's about the Irish historical figure during the... Is it about the Anglo-Irish War or the Easter Uprising? I think it's Anglo-Irish War. I think it starts with the Easter Uprising, which I just know because they make a big deal, but anytime you go to Dublin, it's like, our general post office is the most important monument. You're like, your general post office? Yeah, but it was an important thing. And yeah, so they run around being historical. No, really. I watched it and I was kind of like, eh.
My mom had a huge lady boner for Neeson, and I think saw this movie twice in the theater in a week.
Wow. Yeah, it's one of those. It's like, well, this was good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all right. It's got like a ton of good Irish actors.
As the son of two Irish immigrants, I feel real bad that I barely know who Michael Collins is and have never seen this movie.
He was the guy with the face paint that killed Mel Gibson, right?
Yeah.
Sure. Whatever.
Yes.
The other two movies are fantastic.
Also out this week with Val Kilmer joint.
Oh, holy. Lions don't do this. Lions never had a lair like this. They're doing it for the pleasure.
They are not lions. They are the ghost and the darkness.
It gets even better, the trailer. Keep listening.
We're in a race, Colonel, and the prize is the continent of Africa. We are building the most expensive and daring railroad in history for the glorious purpose of saving Africa from the Africans and, of course, to end slavery.
Yeah! Good old imperialism, yes?
Yeah.
Val Kilmer, Michael Douglas. And again, Val Kilmer, like, mere weeks after Island of Dr. Moreau came out.
I remember this being... All right.
As a little kid who was kind of bored by period pieces, I thought this was really cool. It's about a English company, of course, building a railroad through Africa. And there are two lions known as the Man-Eaters of Tsavo. And they were allegedly a pair of lions, according to legend, ate 135 people working on this railroad over the period of a few years. And the movie's about Val Kilmer and Michael Douglas being hired to kill these. The whole project seems cursed. And Native said, they're not lions. They're the ghosts in the darkness, and they're protecting this continent from you.
Whitey.
But we will build this railroad. Think of...
Built it in the air. Don't care.
Spend billions of doubloons.
It's weird, because it's directed by Stephen Hopkins, who strangely has a lot of genre work I like. Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child, Predator 2, Judgment Night, which I love, and Blown Away, which is terrible.
Oh.
And then... For a grand finale, he made Lost in Space, the movie. Busted down the TV from
Hopkins
whence he never returned. But I thought this movie is pretty great. He He's gone on record saying that Michael Douglas produced this. His character is supposed to be mysterious. And then Michael Douglas said, well, fuck you. I'm editing this film because I produced it. And put about 40 more minutes of himself in the film, taking away all mystery and giving an origin to a very minor character.
And here's what happened before the lions were ghosts.
Yes, but I remember liking this a lot, actually.
I put a note in here also that Jerry Goldsmith did the music.
Yeah.
Jerry Goldsmith, you'll know from most Star Trek things.
Planet of the Apes.
And Planet of the Apes.
Yes. Which
and
I just
and LA Confidential.
Oh, wow. That was really good.
R.I.P. Wow. Curtis Henson. Wow.
But the next movie, I think, is the best movie you've never seen / I've never seen. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I saw it, but I did not. It is A Long Kiss Goodnight.
Oh.
My name is Samantha Cain. At least I think it is. You might not believe it to look at me, but I was born only 8 years ago on a beach in New Jersey. I entered the world fully grown, wearing clothes I don't remember buying. Sometimes I stand naked in the mirror, try to guess my age. 35, maybe? I have lots of scars. They call my condition focal retrograde amnesia. It's no picnic, but I've learned to live with it. Got a job I love. Been seeing someone. Nice guy.
I don't know. I really like the straightforwardness of this. If I were to tell you this is a movie written by Shade Black and directed by Rennie Harlan...
I was about to say, well, I hear Christmas music.
Yeah. Yes.
So I'm guessing Shane Black, Shane Black
all
is
Shane
involved.
Black's movies. Wow. But like, it's an action movie. It just starts off, I don't know where I'm from, who I am. Do you think I'm going to be a super spy, cop, badass martial artist? The answer is yes. And it's, to me, the best thing Rennie Harlan has ever made. It seems like it's beautiful. It's a hyper-violent movie with Joss Whedon as dialogue before there was a Joss Whedon. Sam Jackson plays a private detective who ends up helping protect Gina Davis as she slowly uncovers who she is and embraces her inner badass. Love this clip.
Please, don't move. What the hell is this? Don't give me attitude, sir. See, you're assuming I won't shoot your sorry ass, and everyone knows when you make an assumption, you make an ass out of you and umption. Now, I'm Sergeant Madigan Vice. And if you do cop a tooth jerk off, I will see to it you spend the next 10 years in prison getting ass fucked. And if the case is thrown out because my arrest was too violent, I will personally hire men to ass fuck you for the next 10 years. So if you're an ass fucking fan, you go ahead and mouth off. Meanwhile, you're under arrest for the crime of prostitution.
Fucking, all of this is great. Like, it is, to me, the perfect 90s movie. I know it did well, but not crazy business.
Yeah.
And it clearly is setting itself up for a sequel. Behind the scenes, Samuel Jackson's character died at the end. They had to reshoot it because nobody wanted to see this character die because he was awesome. It was written by Shane Black. 1987 is where we'll talk about Golden Boy Shane Black, because like, not only did he write Lethal Weapon and The Monster Squad, he stars as Hawkins in Predator. I don't know if you can have a better year than that.
Wow.
But Shane Black, he wrote Iron Man 3.
Directed Iron Man
3. Directed Iron Man 3, kind of started his directorial career with Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Nice Guys is out now and great. I love Shane Black. I should say that right now. But he's also a record-setting screenwriter. He earned almost $2 million in The Last Boy Scout. $1 million just to rewrite Last Action Hero and set the record for $4 million for a screenplay for this film, The Long Kiss Goodnight. And it's great. It's clearly a great screenplay. I thoroughly recommend it. However, what it's slightly more famous or infamous for is conspiracy theorists. Once the villain reveal their plans, there's a clip of the terrorist plot here. This makes it into a lot of conspiracy videos.
Oh, boy.
Uh-oh.
1993. World Trade Center bombing, remember? During the trial, one of the bombers claimed the CIA had advanced knowledge. The diplomat who issued the terrorist visa was CIA. It's not unthinkable they paved the way for the bombing.
Oh, boy.
Purely to justify a budget increase.
You're telling me that you're going to fake some terrorist thing just to scare some money out of Congress?
Well, unfortunately, Mr. Hennessy, I have no idea how to fake killing 4,000 people. So we're just going to have to do it for real. Oh, blame it on the Muslims, naturally.
Jesus.
Whatever.
False flag.
I'm saying ahead of its time. Like, those are still legitimate conspiracy theories for everything.
Yeah.
And then it's just part of this funny, fun, crazy action comedy. I really do like the film, though.
I
mean, beyond all that, like, the background music, that's, again, Alan Silvestri,
who
kind of worked with Shane Black on Predator, because he was in that movie, but, like, just makes the most incredible, kind of
unsung movie scores.
Yeah, Back to the Future.
Yeah, Back to the Future. Everyone
Fly
loves.
To the Navigator.
Yeah, but yeah. like Predator is great.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's I miss Geena Davis as an action figure.
Yeah, and I think this,
she was really good. Cutthroat Island, that killed it.
I forgot she was married to Rennie Harlan,
but
the director.
They were married, and made a couple movies
apparently
together.
A concerted effort to make more female-led action movies, which weren't really happening, and Geena Davis is...
It's totally believable.
Looks genetically grown to be the most beautiful actress in the world. I don't know why that didn't take. I've never seen Cutthroat Island, but I sort of want to now.
It's got a couple scenes that are like, well, if this were in a different movie, I would enjoy this.
But in terms
but
of like...
it's a mess.
Grandiose, practical effect-based action movies, this movie is fantastic. This is my lack of the week. Long Kiss Goodnight. I feel like I had seen it, but then watching it, like, I've clearly never seen this. I remember certain scenes, but this is all great.
I was trying to remember what I recognized that villain from, but that labored delivery.
He pops up a bunch.
In the World Is Not Enough?
I do not have not seen
Maybe.
That movie.
No, it's not Robert Carlyle. You think
Patrick
Begbie?
Who's the villain in this? I don't know.
I could look it up.
I just remember
David
that
Morris, Ryan Cox are also in it.
That The World Is Not Enough acronyms into Twine.
Twine.
Anyway,
see the world. See the Long Kiss Goodnight, people. You will not. You will not regret it.
TV this week.
It's a big week for Nickelodeon and Fox.
Yes.
So October 7th, 1996. Fox News Channel launches with a bunch of shows that most of them still air, I believe. Yeah. Your World with Neil Cavuto, Hannity and Colmes, and The O'Reilly Factor. Mm-hmm. I mean, even though O'Reilly has always been a blowhard, like I don't remember Fox News being like. I mean, now everyone it's the conservative, like, talking point, network, channel, whatever. I remember watching Fox News at the beginning and not being, like, totally, like, I don't agree with this.
I can't imagine it was receiving as much attention while there were still Democrats in power.
Yeah.
When that power shifted is when, I think, the spotlight got cast on Fox News. And it was, because we weren't fucking teenagers. We're not watching cable news.
Yeah, in 1996, like, Bill Clinton is just wiping the floor with Bob Dole, like... are you really going to put your resources behind getting Bob Dole elected?
Yeah.
I didn't
realize that Fox News and MSNBC launched so close to each other.
Microsoft, National Broadcast Company.
Yeah, we only had that a couple months ago.
And it's very weird. Roger Ailes just finally out, ending a 20-year streak. But Fox News, I think, is the leader in cable news, at least in America, for better or for worse.
For worse.
So much worse. I didn't want to actually look at the O'Reilly Factor to find a clip of that, so I just got the clip of him freaking out on Inside Edition.
That's tomorrow, and that is it for us today. Okay, I don't know. Whatever it is, it's not right on a teleprompter. I don't know what that is. I've never seen that. That's tomorrow, and that is it. Again, five, four,
it's coming.
Three. That's tomorrow, and that is it for us today, and we will leave you with a... I can't do it. We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live. Fuck it. Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live.
I know we've heard it a lot
fucking
at this point, but it is still great watching
fucking
someone
temper tantrum.
Can't keep.
There are no words there. Like you.
He doesn't know the phrase to play us
to
out.
To play us out.
I love when it cuts to the long cam of the whole studio.
Sting and a cut off his new album. Take it away.
Throwing a pin, taking
jack off.
He's so angry.
It's like he's about to fight the chair.
Ripping cords out of things. Anyway.
I did one on a Bill O'Reilly binge recently, and man, I thoroughly recommend Al Franken yelling at him on the Book TV C-SPAN interview. It's 40 minutes of him just, shut up! Shut up! Shut up! Like, wow, that happened in my lifetime. Fucking sweet. Bill O'Reilly. Miss you, Papa Bear.
Just as gross thing on Fox, October 11th, the X-Files episode Home.
It's the first episode
airs.
I ever saw.
It is, one of the most creepy, disturbing episodes of X-Files. No aliens. It's about Mulder and Scully investigating this family, which is a group of inbred brothers who all have sex with their mother, who
is kept in a drawer
underneath their bed, and she has no limbs.
That was actually that's inspired by something. According
probably
to
the South.
Well, there was a Charlie Chaplin's biography. He talks of like he wrote about going to visit a family who had a son who was limbless and would flop around when music played. And like that, I mean, there's no incest there, but like, I mean, it's X-Files. Got to add something in to spice things up. But it was,
and there was a story years ago about a woman who was held as a sex slave for a couple just under their bed.
Oh,
let's not forget Room.
And there's Room
with incest.
And so very controversial episode.
Was
this
banned or pulled?
It never aired again on Fox. Okay. So like, you know, they would always rerun episodes during the summer. Not this one. But it was eventually rerun on FX. It was the first network television episode in America to ever receive the TVMA rating.
Whoa, really?
Wow.
Yeah.
This is also around the time when those TV ratings came out.
Because of the V-chip, the electronic chip that's inside your television to keep your kids from watching that pornographic 10 o'clock network show.
But here's the network, the TV promo for the episode.
Remember the house your parents warned you to stay away from? This Friday.
Oh my God.
You'll understand why.
This is our home. And this is the way it's gonna stay.
Mulder!
Brand new X-Files. Friday.
Before they moved to Sunday.
This the first episode I ever saw and really left an impression on me. I can't believe this is my introduction to the X-Files.
Oh my God. No conspiracy.
Yeah. No aliens. Incest.
It is a messed up episode.
Terrifying. Yeah.
There's this old timey song called Wonderful, Wonderful. I forget who actually did the song, but it's like, again, like a creepy juxtaposition. The end of the episode, like, one of the inbred sons is left alive and he takes his mother with him in this like old Cadillac and this old timey song's playing and it's just really disturbing.
Real motherfucker.
Yeah. slightly less disturbing are the Nickelodeon premieres of the week. So this is kind of like, this is me at 15.
Not if you don't know the conspiracies.
I'm starting to fall off of like the bandwagon. Some of these I was into, some of these were I was not. October 7th, the very first episode of Hey Arnold.
Oh, so, yeah, if you're against nepotism.
Yeah.
Hey Arnold was launched. It's Craig Bartlett, the creator.
Oh, yeah.
It was launched and financed by one Matt Groening's father, because Craig Bartlett is married to the real-life Lisa Simpson.
Oh, wow.
Matt Groening's. So, yeah, he helped this. Yeah. Hmm. Nepotism. Collusion. Collusion, Hey Arnold. That's where it comes from. Just saying.
I don't think there was quite as
someone
much...
Someone had to tell the truth.
Yeah. You can play the theme.
Again, another song I heard every day at Toys R Us.
Good old football head.
Yeah, we did a Laser Time episode about surprising origins of beloved things. And Hey Arnold is something I was exposed to a lot. It was originally stop-motion Penny from Pee Wee's Playhouse-style animation. It was a comic in the Simpsons magazine.
Huh.
Nepotism. Because he's related to Matt Groening. Yeah. But yeah, really, I wanted to see Hey Arnold the cartoon. By the time it hit, I was almost too old.
Yeah.
I caught him for the first season.
I was completely too old for this.
Just,
yeah. It's a fine show.
Know nothing about it.
It's a fine show. I remember looking at it like, I wish I was lived in the inner city.
Yeah, I have nothing against it at all. Like, I'm sure if I was three, four years younger, I would have been into this.
It eventually got a movie. The show didn't really get a proper finale and is finally getting it in the form of another movie. I would imagine straight to television.
Probably.
Nicktoons channel.
I mostly know one of my... We've done this a few times, but the Dotfulist, who did our theme song, has a great Hey Arnold theme song.
HBO sample.
And normally his Dotfulist stuff is like you heard in the intro. It's very 80s, very synthy, and intentionally 80s fun. This one's great.
Hey Arnold! Hey Arnold!
Just the ending is great. They don't make them like that anymore.
Hey, he wrote the theme song to this show, too.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dotfulist. Hot Dad!
Hot Dad. Get everything.
On Facebook and Patreon.
He had done a theme for Kablam, which premiered on October 10th, 1996. October 11th, 1996.
Very much up on the Kablam. I'm still a big fan of short-form animation.
Yeah, I think that's... I was starting to phase out of Nickelodeon, but this is like, it's Nickelodeon's version of liquid television. Yeah. Like, a lot of serialized cartoons...
Really good.
Like they had the whole rapper, which was Henry and June, but like Action League Now, which I loved, which is just like action figure stop motion animation. the Prometheus and Bob, which is like a an alien and a caveman who are friends.
It's sort of where Nickelodeon would dump its unfinished pilots.
Yeah.
And some shit. Never mind. Keep going. I need to look up what it is because I found one the other day that was just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, like it went on for like 5 or 6 seasons. So like these would cycle out and they would put in new cartoons. Like, but yeah, there would be like 3 or 4 minutes each, and like just a lot of experimental animation. Really neat, and yeah, I stuck around for the first season or two of it. And last, and in my opinion least, we also had, so the pilot episode was aired back in June, but the regular run of Kenan and Kel started on October 12th, and I liked all that, you know, the first 2 seasons I was able to tolerate it. But then this show came out, and I knew I was too old for Nickelodeon when like this show came out, and I wasn't getting the jokes, and here is a clip that proves that I'm too old for this shit.
Have you noticed anything strange about him lately? Who loves orange soda?
I love this episode.
Kel loves orange soda. Is it true? Is it true? Oh, yes, oh, yes, oh, yes, it's true. Ooh. I do. Ooh.
Nope, no stranger than usual.
Man, someone made a joke about naming their Destiny clan Kel Loves Orange Soda, and I didn't know what that was.
Yeah.
And now
it's the only
today,
episode of the show I remember.
Yeah.
Now today, less than 24 hours ago, I read that, like, I don't get it. And now it's like, oh,
you get
it's a 20-year-old joke from a show I didn't watch.
It's an entire plot line of an episode. I loved orange soda, so did Kel.
Well, I mean, I love orange soda, so I'm in.
It's disgusting now. I can't see it.
It's fine.
Yeah.
And Kenan is still like he's on what is like 10th or 11th Saturday Night Live season. So
I hope so. I hope he wasn't banished to that Maya and Martin, that awful Maya and Martin.
No, I think he's still. Yeah, okay. There would be a bigger to do if he was not on the show this year. We would have known.
Yeah.
last but not least, ABC on October 13th, ABC airs the most Troy McClure sounding movie I have ever heard of.
Okay.
Sudden Terror: The Hijacking of School Bus 17.
God, it's a collision course with wackiness.
It's a real thing that aired.
There's
some clips, but it's just like I waved goodbye to my daughter and she's on that bus, and I mean
the school bus 17. Well, there's nothing really for games this week because the N64...
Everybody's enjoying those two N64 launch games so much. There was no time for anything else.
Like, 2 weeks ago, the N64 came out, and I think last week we talked about Wipeout XL / Wipeout 27, really paving the way for cool games to make games super mainstream in a way that didn't just keep them as, like, the thing kids do. Mm-hmm. Age them up in a way that even Sega of America tried to do with the Genesis, but couldn't get it to stick in a generational transition where it would carry over into the Saturn and then over into the Dreamcast. But PlayStation, Sony were able to make it start sticking with things like Wipeout and other games that would come out like GoldenEye, like FF7, that just made games cool and a thing for people to talk about. An open company and not just a thing where you're like, yeah, I really like playing Nintendo and I'm not 10, where you can talk about it with your 10-year-old friends. But we'll go out with Pony because Genuine, everybody, 20 years old. When we come back, what happened this week in 2006?
Mrs. Internet and all the ships at sea, it's time for Diana's Classic Corner. See what else further back in the past is worth a watching this week, October 7th through the 13th. 50 years ago this week, a couple movies out that none of them I can quite recommend. Dead Heat on a Merry-Go-Round, which is such a weird title, with James Coburn. Only worth looking up on YouTube so you can see Harrison Ford, I think his first film appearance, where he plays a bellboy, and you're like, that guy can't act. Also there's Mr. Budwing, which is kind of another weird title, but with James Garner, and that's kind of an interesting, like, amnesia kind of thriller. And there's Hawaii, which is a overstuffed epic with Julie Andrews and Max von Sydow, but really young Gene Hackman, so that's fun. The movie I will recommend, 75 years ago this week, October 10th, 1941, Never Give a Sucker an Even Break, starring W.C. Fields. Not my favorite W.C. Fields movie. I think that's The Bank Dick is his best one. Stop laughing. But it's W.C. Fields is someone that's like you've seen parodied so much, but I don't know if people today really know the original so well. So I'll recommend Never Give a Sucker an Even Break, or The Bank Dick, or My Little Chickadee, which he did with Mae West. He was an interesting comic performer with a very, very specific kind of humor that's just completely lost. It's very, very vaudevillian, but it's a lot of fun. And that's it for this week. Stay classic.
Santa baby, slip a sable under the tree for me.
This is the Pussycat Dolls.
Oh, God, really?
Singing Santa Baby. Mm. And if you're wondering why...
Boop-be-doop-be-doop-boop, yeah. Sex. Thank you, community.
The infant.
And Diana, get out of here. You're bothering me. Thank you for bringing up the Bank Dick. It's a good movie.
That is Pussycat Dolls, Santa Baby from Now. That's What I Call Christmas 3.
Yeah! Jesus.
With one disc being Nat King Cole, Sinatra, Bing Crosby, Johnny Cash. Oh. Second disc is Pussycat Dolls, Reliant K, Rihanna, Celine Dion.
You kidding me? The tweens buying this album are going to throw that Nat King Cole disc out the window.
But it's also plus Christmas albums from Wynonna Judd, James Taylor. Basically, it's officially Christmas as far as...
first week of October?
As far as retailers are concerned. Ugh. The Halloween stuff is not all the way out, but you're making room, man. You got to make room for all that Christmas stuff. So, if you're not ready to hear Christmas music, too bad, because even now in 2016, if you walk into a Target this week, there's a Christmas section waiting for you.
Yeah. Darn it, I prefer 1986 when you'd air a special on December 24th, and then you'd be immediately irrelevant.
That's only the UK. It still does that. I love they have traditional Christmas Eve. This is when this Christmas special airs, and never before
we
or
are
after.
Obsessed with the memories of things and not what is actually happening.
It's about time for my annual hibernation.
So wait, when do the Halloween albums come out? Where monsters dance with each other.
That's only in October. Halloween, we specifically...
I was mixing in the studio late one night.
I was
editing. I ran out of ideas. It was an awful fright.
Pussycat Doll sang a Christmas song, and all the monsters were dancing along.
I am a hack.
A songwriting hack.
Here's his hack.
Oh, boy. Six more weeks of this. Also, While the City Sleeps, We Rule the Streets, which is Cobra Starship's album, Snakes on a Plane song, that we already played.
Stuck in my head for a long time after that, so maybe I got to give that song more credit.
So Close Your Eyes.
So Kiss Me
Goodbye.
Kiss Me
Goodbye.
But Snakes on a Plane's already a decade old, so if you missed that, it's a few episodes ago.
I didn't see the venom in their eyes.
News, Muhammad Yunus and the Grameen Bank, not a Harry Potter they win the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yep.
What did they win it for?
They won it for microfinancing. The idea that's like, oh, well, poor people, we could just give them food, or be like, hey, you want to learn to work this sewing machine? You could have, like, you could make some dresses and then sell them to your neighbors, and there you've got a business going.
Huh. Comes with a free subprime mortgage. It's 06. Nobody knew.
And a stamp card that lets you, if you buy four shirts from me,
a partially completed Subway Club card.
Movies this week, real quick, introducing a sequel.
Tell me what happened.
Don't go in that house.
Swoosh.
Everyone who has been inside that house has died.
This is The Grudge 2.
Even the plumber and the guy who put in the flooring.
Is this Sarah Michelle Gellar?
Every aunt who ever walked in this house. Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Amber Tamblyn.
Not a remake of a movie, unlike the 2004 Grudge, which was a remake, or you know, an Americanization of a Japanese movie.
It's an original sequel,
it's a sequel
to a remake.
But you know, as far as a Western audience is concerned, it's just a sequel to 2004's The Grudge. First Grudge did really well here, so here's another one. When a person dies in an intense emotional state, it leaves a curse, so you getting haunted, buddy. That is The Grudge. The second one fizzled fast. This is an actual interesting note. The film showed, this is from the wiki, The film showed poor staying power and earned $39.1 million in North America, making it the first ever film, which, again, for all film, for a record to be set in 2006, that's not like highest grossing something.
Yeah.
First ever film to open over $20 million, yet gross less than 50% of its earnings after its opening weekend.
Wow.
So, like, reasonably large opening weekend, over $20 million, and then rocket ship to the bottom.
Catastrophic word of mouth?
Yeah. Which I don't remember. Like, I remember almost seeing this. Like, I think we were, like, on our way out. Like, never mind. Yeah. But we almost did.
No, I was too snotty at this point. I was like, I'll watch the original.
I did see this. Mm-hmm. Never saw the original.
Wow.
But this and just this year, The Conjuring 2, are both instances where it's like, well, all my friends are going to see this movie. I don't want to stay home tonight. I'll watch this sequel to a horror movie.
Are all your friends 19? Yeah.
But the first Grudge I liked, it was, like, pretty creepy, and like when the shadowy thing is in the bedroom making rattlesnake noises at them, it scared the shit out of me. And it was one of those not quite Blair Witch level thing, but that creaking awful noise the Grudge monster makes or whatever, this just this guttural noise. After seeing the first Grudge, already on my 2 a.m. to 10 a.m. shift working as producer at ABC, the local affiliate for the morning show, and it's complete darkness, and it came out in the winter / fall, so it is dark as night can be in the Midwest in a frozen winter. There's snow, it's ice, everything is silent, cold, and creaky. And I accidentally tapped the door in pitch darkness with my foot. And the door, as it's creaking, goes and like I that icy cold feeling of terror where I'm like, that can't be real. That can't be happening! And then finally realizing, it's the door, it's fine.
Then a TV screen shows the haunted news.
And then I had to go put on news of the local happenings, where, guess what happens in the Midwest when it's too cold to do anything? Nothing. No one does anything. If it snows, there's no crime, there's no anything.
Everyone's no grandma like, freezes to death?
No. Everybody's like, fuck, I'm not going anywhere. Nothing happens. The only people who are doing their jobs are the news and poor retail workers who have to show up in case someone wants to buy a pool in November. Anyway, Man of the Year, Robin Williams. Here's the trailer.
Politicians are a lot like diapers. They should be changed frequently and for the same reason.
Tom Dobbs was the biggest name in fake news.
More and more people are watching your show, Jon Stewart, Bill Maher, for news. How crazy is that?
Until the day he decided to stop going for laughs.
Maybe you should run for president.
And go for votes instead.
Tomorrow, I will officially announce my candidacy for president.
And there we go. Jon Stewart runs for president.
Yeah, the movie.
It was reuniting Barry Levinson with Robin Williams. They'd done Toys, God. Good Morning Vietnam together. They were buddies. Howard Stern was originally supposed to play this part. It's Jon Stewart running for president. You heard Christopher Walken name-check him. What you didn't hear is Lewis Black sitting right next to him. So basically, Lewis Black starring as... he's more of his aide in this movie. I hated this movie. I was looking forward to it. I was looking forward to a funny Robin Williams movie. And it's kind of morose and sucks.
It seems odd because Robin Williams, he's funny, he's a great improviser, but I know some reviews, and I was thinking the same thing of like, he doesn't have the kind of chops to be a talk show host.
He's the best guest in talk show history.
That's a very specific kind of being able to balance humor with being, fast on your feet and improvising.
Oh, you hear about this?
Yeah, it's just he doesn't have that same sort of aura that he, can do a monologue on a talk show.
Well, I was
despite being an amazing guest.
Yeah,
it's so damn funny.
The movie. I thought the whole movie was going to be like. There's something interesting in that premise of like a comedian running for president.
Celebrity running for president?
Foreshadowing. Before we can watch it live. But it what ends up happening is
we just had a governor who is Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Most of the movie is about how he actually wins the election as the result of election fraud not perpetrated by him. And like whether or not to report that and like, this isn't funny. This isn't funny at all. I don't know. This movie bums me out. Shouldn't even have brought it up.
I feel it's kind of like if you want to see a good, election satire.
Election,
yeah, but The Candidate with Robert Redford. It sounds like it was kind of going in that direction and then just didn't.
Or Head of State with Chris Rock and Bernie Mac. Who the motherfucker?
Is that someone Bulworth is about? I don't remember.
Or Bulworth. Well, that's different.
But. Just based on the title and the main actor, I always mix this up with World's Greatest Dad.
Which is the best latter-day Robin Williams movie. But yeah, you know what? Enough time has passed. Yeah. It's fine. Watch it. Mm-hmm. Involves a lot of suicide, though.
Also out this week was the first John Cena starring film. I have a clip here.
Still the best.
I prepped myself for this. I knew this was coming.
So this is the movie, I think, is 90 minutes of this.
It's crazy. That people, the third segment of a podcast.
And that movie is John Cena.
But no, for real, here's the actual clip of the trailer.
Goddamn!
Right. Got me.
This time for real, I'm clearly clicking it and loading it up.
This October, meet a one-man strike force.
What?
I tried to kill this guy twice today. Just won't die.
Oh, Jesus, it's just going to blow up shit for an hour.
I thought it was going to say the Marine.
You know, he must. Oh, wait, he's going to say John Cena, maybe.
John Cena.
God.
What happened?
A Marine showed up, that's what.
There we go.
That trailer looked great.
I like this movie.
There's a lot of shit blown up.
It looked more expensive than every other WWE production I've ever seen.
Yeah, because around 2005, 2006, 2007, they had decently budgeted movies that went to theaters. This went to theaters.
This is a Fox film.
Yeah, The Condemned with Steve Austin went to theaters. 12 Rounds, also another John Cena joint that I kind of like.
Is that the one where he decapitates Littlefinger on an ATV?
No, that's not it.
It does happen.
Yeah.
It's a Stone Cold
12
movie.
Rounds.
I'm playing Border Patrol.
12 Rounds is almost like Die Hard with a Vengeance 2.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, I've got 12 rounds for you in the city, 12 tricks for you to solve or whatever.
It's a difference from 13 Blocks that came out earlier.
Yeah. Wow, that's confusing.
Such an easy porn parody.
Yeah, and then also One Night with the King with Peter O'Toole.
O'Toole. Wait, but The Marine is, I think, is it the most successful WWE movie ever?
It's on its fifth iteration now. So
it's like a rite of passage now.
Yeah, so John Cena was only the Marine once. The Marine 2 was a wrestler named Mr. Kennedy. Who was in the WWE for like 3 or 4 years. But then Marine 3, 4, and 5, which I believe 5 just came out this year, All-Star The Miz, who is from the real world, Mike Mizanin.
Yeah, but, who is in the middle, for what it's worth, of a really great run,
just
being a total dirtbag.
And he's like, a couple times on WWE Raw, he's just called, he's like, I'm the Marine, damn it!
Yeah.
Oh, I guessed it right. It is the most successful WWE studio film ever.
Yeah,
it made $5 million.
It's not hard to imagine.
Like,
Well, that's only reported box office.
Sure. TV? Well, sorry. One Night with the King, Peter O'Toole, Omar Sharif. Biblical story of Esther.
Yep. What? It's the story of Purim, everybody.
Huh?
Purim. You know.
Purim? From Final Fantasy IV?
Is that
a
Pokemon?
You know, the fun Jewish holiday, Purim.
But the wrestler movie's over there. I want to see that.
No, come on, kids. You know who was the original wrestler?
Who?
You know, Esther was kind of like a wrestler.
You know, Moses wrestled the sea in half.
Because, you know, Haman, he was sort of like a heel, and he was trying to kill all the Jews.
Mm-hmm. Supposed to King Herod's baby face.
It actually got pretty bad reviews, and I never watched it. It's nice to make a Queen Esther movie, because it's a pretty good story, and yay, Purim. But it is nice to see Peter O'Toole and Omar Sharif back together after Lawrence of Arabia in 62? Yeah. So that's nice.
They are no longer
with us.
There was a note that this movie, Marine and Grudge 2, none of them were screened for critics.
Oh, that's bad news.
Which is weird. So that only left you with Man of the Year.
They were mostly review proof anyway.
Yeah, the Marine's totally review proof.
Moving into TV.
Yes.
This will pay off, believe me. You know it. You can feel it in your bones.
Oh, I'm not sure if I am, though.
Freebird?
Well, yes! We're ready to strike!
spiritual forces are in full flight. We're coming by air and on the ground. Monday Night Football taking over the town.
I love
The intros to this from every era with Hank Williams,
Chris Farley in that role.
It's the perfect intro for what was and still is literally America's number one TV show.
Yeah. Well, are you ready for No Football?
Whoa, what happened?
October 9th, 2006 was the first ABC primetime Monday during the football season that didn't have Monday Night Football, because Monday Night Football had moved over to ESPN like a week or two earlier. So they rolled out a new set of programs on Monday night that were the complete opposite of Monday Night Football. It was a programming block that consisted of Wife Swap, The Bachelor, and a show called What About Brian that lasted for like 2 years. But it had the hunk from Seventh Heaven in the main role. Yeah.
The pedophile dad?
No. Oh. The oldest son, who at that point was, I guess, legal for ladies to leer at. But the most notable debut this week was the sitcom 20 Good Years that starred Jeffrey Tambor and John Lithgow. I'm kidding. That did debut that night. Only it's called 20 Good Years because it's about John Lithgow and Jeffrey Tambor. They both play men that realize we only have 20 good years left. Let's live life to the fullest. Called 20 Good Years. Lasted 21 days. Canceled in 4 weeks.
Wow.
But premiering alongside that is, in my opinion, one of the best sitcoms of the 2000s. Wow.
Yeah, definitely.
Yep.
So
this show did 30 Rock. Mm-hmm. Yep. Cemented my crush on Tina Fey.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Oh, yeah.
Yep. I had a friend tell me, oh, you should dress as Tina Fey for Halloween. And I'm like, how would you tell? She wears plaid shirts and cardigans and glasses.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I've been
wearing right now.
Meanwhile, I've been cosplaying as Judah Friedland the whole year. Nobody's noticed.
Nobody's noticed, yes.
My beef with 30 Rock was, though, that I've always thought she was, like, funny, cute, all this stuff, but like in the show, she's constantly putting herself down and like, oh, we got food stuck in my, and I'm such a slob. It's like, you're super hot. Like,
like you one episode, she grew her mustache out and came to the office.
Play both sides.
Those are not mutually exclusive. Yeah. You can be hot in the office and still work on your night cheese at home.
I get it. It's just like,
oh, don't have sex in my bed. I eat there.
But it's just like, you're still done up in makeup and look like a movie star.
It's
like
true.
You can't be like, oh, and I'm such a slob on this TV show where I make millions of dollars. Yeah. It's just like it was weird. A lot of those jokes fell flat for me. But
no,
everything else about this show is
self-deprecating.
The very first episode aired October 11th, 2006.
Yay.
And while like the core of the show is always together, and like that's why there's not a bad episode. It's not like The Office, and I've said this before, The Office has a bad season, Parks and Rec has a bad season, 30 Rock has no bad seasons. And because the core was there from the beginning, Tina Fey, Tracy Morgan, Alec Baldwin, Jane Krakowski, it is weird to
Jack
go back.
JackBrayerGrizzon.com.
I love Grizzon.com.
But there are some weird elements that I've kind of forgot about the first season. Like the fact that Rachel Dratch was in every episode as a guest star.
As a different character.
Because she was originally supposed to have Jane Krakowski's role, but Jane Krakowski's Jane Krakowski, so she gets the role.
The network insisted on a hot person.
Yeah, but I think it worked out. And it's kind of sad. Like, she is in those first two episodes, and then they kind of just phase her out. And she comes back from time to time, but it's like...
She ends up playing the same character, basically, in Kimmy Schmidt.
Yes.
Yep.
And but also there's like this one character named Josh who's kind of like the Jimmy Fallon.
He was the star of the show before Tracy Morgan came on. And he just disappears.
And but the entire premise of the first episode is that Alec Baldwin is the new president at NBC, and he says to Tina Fey, like, this show, the girly show, TGS, it needs Tracy Morgan. And Tina Fey's all like, no, he's a crazy guy. And here's a clip basically explaining. So
you're missing that third kind of heat. I want you to think about Tracy Jordan.
Okay, the black guy?
The black movie star. I flew with him on a private jet to the Super Bowl recently, and I found him very entertaining.
Isn't he, crazy?
Tracy's had his problems in the last few years.
I am a Jedi!
In his underwear
on a highway.
In traffic.
I am a Jedi! I am a Jedi!
I don't know.
It's also weird to it's a visual thing, but in that clip, he's so thin. He's kind of thin.
Yeah.
And then like 10 years
later, he's so good on this goddamn show.
Oh,
but
so
is
good.
he's named Tracy Jordan almost as a mockery of, like, did you think he was playing anybody but himself? Yeah. But this is very much Martin Lawrence, as is all the movies he stars in.
Yeah. Because this is around when he was, like, taken in for exhaustion.
The stroke, gun-waving incident.
Yeah.
But yeah, this, we just talked about Studio 60 launching just a couple weeks ago, and then this
is
hot.
I would have put my money on.
And yeah, and this is hot on its heels, and then this ran for 5 seasons?
Six, I believe.
Yeah. Man, I think what's... Yeah, six or seven. Six. They went to 2013. Like, it lasted for a while, and yeah, it's just very enduring. And
it has one of my favorite Emmy acceptance speeches, because it was at the same time all that shit was going on with Conan O'Brien and Jay Leno. Conan O'Brien taking over The Tonight Show, and Jay Leno being moved to primetime so he could do a shitty, pappy fucking talk show at 10 o'clock at NBC. Wouldn't have to pay the amount of money it does to pay writers and people who can actually frame things in a shot and edit.
Yeah.
And Tina Fey, I think the last thing she said when she accepted the Emmy for best program was like, and thanks to NBC, I'm sorry my show is more expensive than a talk show.
But
I'm sure we'll be talking about this show again quite a few times.
I remember really clearly the ads for it, and they're talking about, like, oh, here's Tina Fey, you know, she's from SNL, and here's Alec Baldwin.
So good.
Alec Baldwin, what was the last TV show you were on? It's Knots Landing. And they show a picture of him. He's so beautiful. Yeah. And like, oh, my God.
And he got the role because, like, Alec Baldwin ended up becoming an SNL MVP. When I was growing up and just becoming pop culture obsessed, this Alec Baldwin guy is corny. He sucks. I hate him. And then you see him on SNL, and he handles this material so fucking well.
So
never
funny.
Be serious again.
He does many. His impressions are great. He's because
this was
hilarious.
Technically beneath him.
Yeah.
But
oh yeah.
I think Tina Fey said he wanted to stay in New York.
Yeah. Right.
He likes to work there, and we're all friends because Alec Baldwin sits in the writers' room.
I can remember it was after the first or second season where he's like, I gotta quit. Like he had that firestorm where he called his daughter a pig on the phone. He stayed through it. Like everyone stayed through it till the end. Like no real defections from the cast or anything. Mm-hmm. It's just a great show.
I remember watching the first two episodes and trying to get into it, and sometimes I don't know.
I thought I was gonna hate it because the whoosh cam. I hate whoosh cam. Malcolm in the Middle. I know what a cutaway is. I've been trained. I get it.
There are just a handful of things about the jokes initially that were just like, I get this is what comedians think is funny, but it feels like comedians trying to entertain each other, not entertain a TV audience, which is a very different thing. Mm-hmm. And when it seems that's up its own ass, I start to get turned off because I'm aware of what's going on. So I was like, it took me a couple episodes to get in, but for some reason, this is the first joke that stuck with me. And the fact that it's isolated with 100,000 views means other people must have loved it too. But it's Alec Baldwin's super dry period on the rest of the joke.
I'm sorry, you're saying you want us to use the show to sell stuff?
Look, I know how this sounds.
No, come on, Jack, we're not doing that. We're not compromising the integrity of the show to sell.
Wow, this is Diet Snapple?
I know, it tastes just like regular Snapple, doesn't it?
You should try Plumagranate. It's amazing.
I only date guys who drink Snapple.
Look, we all love Snapple. Lord knows I do, but focus.
Just the he turns to someone on his side off camera. Lord knows how much I love Snapple.
My favorite joke I have saved on my phone. It's some throwaway line about I suppose I could call in some favors, ask Dick Cheney, but I haven't seen him since the last time we went manatee hunting. Just like really, it flashes to this picture of them crouching next to a dead manatee. So good. With shotguns. That's how they killed it.
Goodness.
I think my favorite is probably just like, wait, are you wearing a tuxedo now? It's after 6 p.m. What am I, a farmer? I've said that many times. Totally out of context. I'm not wearing a tuxedo at the time.
And as a New Yorker, one of my favorite jokes, and this is way later on, but Lutz, who is a very underrated character. They're all figuring out what to get for lunch, and it's his turn, and it's just such a slow, and this is an actual sandwich chain in the Northeast. Blimpies.
I've had a Blimpies. They're terrible.
And they stubbornly won't change their name.
It's like a sandwich but wet.
And then
Starburns is what's the
Judah
name?
Freelander.
Oh, but yeah, I was thinking.
Not Starburns.
The Judah Friedlander's great.
Yeah. But also, what, October 13th?
Yep. 1 vs. 100 airs on NBC. It had been on a bunch of other, countries. I think it originated in the UK or wherever. Yeah. Bob Saget's the host. I completely forgot that he hosted that show, but I mostly know this because 3-4 years later, it's an Xbox Live game that it was really cool. I so miss
100 people playing a game show live. That's trivia. Yeah. Like, it was really cool.
And it was free or something like that, right?
Free. You would win Microsoft points if you were chosen.
Yeah, which is nuts.
Yeah.
Really, well, a few actual notable yet not notable video games this week in 2006. Notable and yet not. Scarface, The World is Yours.
Ah. Oh, boy.
For PS2, Xbox, and PC. Based on the movie Scarface, that changes the ending such that Tony Montana lives and then gets revenge on everybody. Mm-hmm. Pacino did not return because they felt his voice had changed too much, but he selected his replacement, Andre Sogliuzzo. But you get Alice Real, Stephen Bauer, and Robert Loggia all come back. As well as, I got a clip here of people having a conversation. Another voice actor who you'll know immediately.
Ah, fuck. Why don't you two stop bickering about who fucked up where? Put your money where your mouth is. Sosa, you have connections with the military here. Give him some money and roll some tanks on the prick. Come on.
But yeah.
What? James Woods?
You got James Woods.
Super James Woods.
He's not in Scarface, right? Because Oliver Stone uses him from time to time.
Yeah.
Well, he's in the game.
Wow, weird.
And then a moment that, again, I saw Scarface 1 million years ago, so I don't remember... But like
you might recognize it from every single rap album of the 1990s.
I remember it from a dorm room that you regret being in.
Yeah. That was too knowing of a laugh from Dave. Wow.
No. I never lived in a dorm.
It was my room. But and then here you are, I think, confronting the final boss, and here you get to hear the sound alike. But I don't remember where Tony is character-wise, but he has a heroic... Like, so, like he seemed like a completely moralist, like, I'm nuts, I'm... But here he is. Tell me what you think of this.
What about what you did? I told you not to fuck me, and you did, Tony.
There were kids in the fucking car, Alex! Innocent kids! Huh? What kind of animals you got working for you?
I want to clear something up with you, Tony.
That's just like,
did Ted Turner do this? Like, this is so sanitized. In-
yeah, it's like, there were kids, innocent children, I'm Scott, like... Did, he's not like that in the movie at all, right?
No.
Like, no semblance of
I cannot do that today. It's Christmas.
Like, no, that doesn't make any sense to who the character is. That's why people, like, love the character is because he's totally amoral and doesn't give a fuck about anything but achieving his
own
ends.
Maybe there's some kind of, like, trees of dialogue choices that lead you here that's intentionally...
They bought that license like, oh, we can't have a protagonist this unlikable for 30 hours.
So I gave you another link. There's a timestamp on in the title of the video that has another guest star in this game who is even more out of place than anyone else, I would say.
Are we here to do business or what?
You a nice chap. Can you talk as loudly as your shirt? Because I can't understand a fucking word you're saying.
It's Ricky Gervais.
He's in this
in Scarface.
Yeah. What the hell?
In
the most phrase of random like passerby citizen
NPC guy. Wearing a basketball jersey. Weird. Also out this week, Mortal Kombat Armageddon. 62 characters. Wow. Everyone I think from every Mortal Kombat up to this point. A cart game called Motor Kombat. A creative character, a huge cutscene opening that at the time, I remember when this came out, it was just like, god damn, like, all these characters interacting and fighting on a giant space pyramid or whatever it is. It concludes a story that actually began in the first Mortal Kombat, ran through 1, 2, and 3, ran through the PS2 era with Deadly Alliance, MK Deception, like, actually wraps up, like, fighting games get a lot of shit for having a dumb story or no story. Not that Mortal Kombat story is great by any means, but, like, it actually has one and is sequential and actually bothers to have a mythos and a reasoning for things. And even if it's ridiculous, it still bothers. But this was the end, and they all kind of end up blown up. Each character has its own ending. I don't know what they consider canonical, but it's notable in that when Mortal Kombat was rebooted in 2011, so there, from 2006 to 2011, there really weren't any Mortal Kombat notable games, and they would call it MK9 or MK2011. Well, MK versus DC was between these, but that's not really, you know, that's its own thing.
Neither here nor there.
Yeah, but when Mortal Kombat 9 was known for its story mode that was opening with this cutscene from Mortal Kombat Armageddon, everybody getting killed by all the bad guys, Shao Kahn or someone else, I'm sure, but it begins with Raiden going back in time to Mortal Kombat 1 to try and warn people, because he's the God of Lightning, he transfers back in his own body. But he's the only one who has any memories of this because he's already lived through it. Mm-hmm. So the Mortal Kombat 9 story mode is you reliving MK 1, 2, and 3 as and your perspective changes, but it's bouncing around trying to prevent this crazy future from happening. But it all relates back to Mortal Kombat Armageddon, which came out this week.
This sounds a lot like Mortal Kombat Trilogy, which like they released almost 10 years apart from each other.
Yeah, which Trilogy mixes and matches MK1, 2, and 3 pieces together, and they don't gel well, and the game's pretty buggy and weird. But anyway, also out this week, we just talked about Clover releasing Okami, Capcom game. At this week, though, is God Hand. Beat 'em up that is like, imagine RE4 with that over-the-shoulder camera, Resident Evil 4, but Melee mostly, where you beat the crap out of people with ridiculous over-the-top characters, insane moves, clumsy yet, not clumsy, but very deliberate controls for your character to move around, and it's such a wacky, weird, fun game, there was no chance this game was ever going to be successful, because it's just that weird, but like... Here's a simple sample dialogue where Gene, the main character, is approaching a guy smoking a cigar who's a boss.
Finally, a boss fight.
This little huevon is the God Hand. Oh, that's rich.
flips the table, puts a cigar out on the fancy rug, and is like, oh, shit.
What's the matter? You want a tight budget, big guy?
You know what? I'm getting a bit hungry, and a little huevon sounds like it would hit the spot.
You need to feed your brain, not your ass.
Love it.
But it's just an irreverent Dante-ish kind of character from Devil May Cry, just like throwing silly one-liners, beating people up with ridiculous mini-games as you beat them up. A lot of DNA for Bayonetta that you would see down the line would... you know, debut here. And this game is inexplicably on PSN for PS3 right now. Of all the PS2 games that showed up on PS3 to download, this is one of them. And I remember we were working at Capcom when that happened, and we just were like, God Hand? Like, we didn't know. Like, I mean, at least people knew in the building, but like not the community team. We're just like, what? This is a momentous occasion. Like, why is this game out? Like, this is great. And we had no forewarning, but... you can play it now. Gun came out on PSP. Crash.
Come to this?
Yes. Crash Boom Bang. Only notable because we just talked about Crash Bandicoot turning 20 years old a few episodes ago on the PlayStation. But this DS, Nintendo DS Crash Bandicoot game, Crash Boom Bang, is a party game notable for being the first Japanese developed Crash Bandicoot game. Developed by Dimps. Who in mere months will be working on Street Fighter 4. So it's like, that is a huge change of fortune. And finally, Tales of the Abyss, which is part of the Tales of series with Tales of Phantasia. The most famous one being Tales of Symphonia, which was the GameCube game, sold really well. There was a direct sequel for the Wii, Tales of Symphonia, forget what the subtitle is, wasn't nearly as good. But much like Final Fantasy or whatever, it's just one of those series that has run for years and years and years and has numerous entries. Tales of Vesperia for 360, Tales of Zillia, or however it's pronounced.
The Tales series.
Yeah. Tales of the Abyss, follow-up to Symphonia. I was actually set to review this, because we're at Games Radar at this point, but I was pulled off this because I was reviewing Okami instead, and they were releasing so close together. It's like, you cannot review two huge RPG 90-hour games like back-to-back. It sold almost 800K worldwide, which is a big for the Tales series. The Tales series in general is known for skits where the characters, you'll be walking around in your overworld and the button will push where a character will see something in the environment and you'll push a button and their character profile images will come up and they'll just have a dialogue back and forth that's not related to the plot, not related to any mission you're on. It's just character building where you actually have non sequitur moments where they'll be like, so you seem to really be interested in these donuts. Like, oh, yeah, I love donuts. Ever since my mom, blah, blah, blah. And they usually have some kind of humorous ending, and then you just keep going along your way. But that was a fun thing to get to know these characters where you didn't have to have only plot points in a video game. It was
Star Ocean did it a bit, too.
Did it? I've never played that series. But the characters are always really vibrant. The dialogue's fun and snappy, but it is tropey as hell, and it is JRPG... out the ass. Like, if you're not into this type of game, I can't imagine any Tales game's gonna convince you otherwise. But Symphonia was great. Was a lot of fun. I'm trying to think, there was some connection. I think Dean Cain is a voice in Symphonia, and we just talked about I might be married. No, I'm thinking of Grandy Extreme. Right. See how they all blur together? But anyway, we'll go out with one of the songs from this game at the end of the show. But that is the end of the show.
Ooh.
Thanks for listening. 302010.net.
I'm going to plug my toilet because I got to pee.
302010.net, where you can find all of our episodes on our homepage. Or you can go to wondery.com/302010, written out as words. And find all of our episodes there. You can review us on iTunes, rate the show, which always helps. It helps put it in people's eyeballs to do that. Our Amazon links as well are on lasertimepodcast.com, where you can find articles and stuff, as well as other episodes of Laser Time itself, the flagship show of this network.
Yeah, there was recently a crossover episode featuring the weirdest crossovers ever.
Yes.
A two-parter about live-action movies that became cartoons, and a couple of them were in that in 1996 and 2006, I believe, and 86.
And we've recently done, or will have about to be doing, something about timelines you'll want to be keeping your eyes and ears open for. But that Patreon, again, patreon.com/lasertime, where you can support the show.
I'm starving.
Yes, patreon.com/lasertime, home of bonus time, which we talk about our favorite things from the year 2016.
Yeah. That's from the future.
Yes. And also, Patreon is the home of Cheap Podcast, a pro wrestling podcast where we talk about a lot of John Cena.
No. I didn't have a cue.
It's okay. Yeah, I know we've got another omnipresent theme to play.
I have a song ready to go. But yeah, we also have Video Game Apocalypse. Yeah.
Video Game Apocalypse, hosted by the one who knows video game stuff in my household, Michael Raparis. And that's all they talk, just video games. They never go off topic or anything.
That brings us to the final segment of the show, as always.
Oh, birthday is a doodly-doo.
Birthday song from home movies. Thank you again.
Birthday is a rapidoo.
Rapidoo! Birthdays this week of the show took place Simon Cowell, Vladimir Putin, Tony Braxton, Yo-Yo Ma, Tom York, Wrestler Rhino, John Mellencamp, Bruno Mars, Nick Cannon, Matt Damon, The Miz, Chevy Chase, Sigourney Weaver, Jesse Jackson, Paul Hogan, John Lennon, I don't know why I kept the accent, would have had a birthday, something happened to him, Eddie Guerrero, also dead, Brandon Routh, Guillermo del Toro, Scott Bakula, Mario Lopez, Maya, Brett Favre, Dale Earnhardt Jr., Jody Benson, a.k.a.
Ariel,
the Little Mermaid, David Lee Roth,
the other DLR,
Luke Perry, Hugh Jackman, Kirk Cameron, Dusty Rhodes, hard times everybody, Ashanti, Sammy Hagar, and now the quiz.
David Lee Roth and Sammy Hagar?
That is weird.
Wow.
In the same week. Restart the song here. 1971, born in. Mm-hmm. Was a voice in all three Madagascar movies. Had a part in Sweeney Todd.
Sacha Baron Cohen.
Yes.
Yeah. Damn
it.
My last note My last note was in Madonna's music video. Music.
Yes. Oh, that's true.
But yeah, we'll go out good God, which tab is this? again, thanks for listening. We'll be back
Thank you.
Yes, next week with What Happened 10 years ago, taking us out when I was reviewing Tales of the Abyss, the intro, as most anime games are wont to have, a great opening theme song or some kind of cool montage of clips set to music. And this game has a lot of animated cutscenes stuff in the opening. The US version took the lyrics out and it's just an instrumental. In Japan, it's a song called Karma. The band's name is Bump of Chicken. but more importantly, the instrumental...
Hey man, want to do a bump of chicken?
Yo, let me get a rail of that chicken, man.
Let me get a bump off that chicken. But the song is great. And I'm doing the American one because when I heard it with lyrics, I was like, there's plenty of Japanese songs I like. It's not anything against hearing the lyrics. It's just, it was so much fun booting up the game every time. And just, I have to watch this opening. I love this song so much. We'll go out again. This is Tales of the Abyss, 10 years old this week. See you next time.